It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Welcome to Forward Nation Radio with me, David Leventhal, Thanksgiving edition. Thank you for joining us and happy holidays to all. Or for our Fox News viewers, Merry Christmas. It was a Merry Christmas for someone, a little bit early, but never too early for Christmas. Yes, a $450 million was spent by somebody for a painting. Or, as Fox News would have it, proof the supply-side economics works. Because after all, if that $450 million plus, rounding error, a million here, a million there, of that $450 million paid for the painting, 50 or so million was paid in fees. How do you get that gig? How do you get to be the person who sells not crappy cheap artwork, but something that will secure your family's financial future if you sell one of them? How do you become the real estate salesperson who doesn't sell $200,000 apartments on Long Island, but sells $20 million apartments in Manhattan and thus secures your family's financial future? Boy, these people must be great, or they must be incredible at kissing ass. Oh, we'll talk about sex a little bit later in the show. In the meantime, I guess that money's really trickling down, isn't it, to whoever was involved in selling a painting for over $400 million plus fees. Leading one to ask, who the hell is stupid enough to spend $450 million on a painting? Well, potentially. But he probably doesn't even have that kind of money. We don't know. We don't see his tax returns. And in any event, if he had spent $450 million for a Leonardo da Vinci painting, you could see him in the White House right now between tweets, crossing out Jesus's face and putting his face in, maybe giving it a blonde wig, coloring it orange. But that's okay. Whoever did buy it has an awful lot of money. $450 million for a painting. I'm not sure why, but this has been irking me tremendously since it happened. In a world with starving children, $450 million for a painting. In a world in which we do not spend enough for education, where we're taking away health care from some of the people who have it in America, $450 million for a painting. Where did that money come from? How much more can we expect the next painting to sell for once the Republican tax cuts go through? How much money is the owner of this painting going to be getting when the tax cuts go through? Who makes this kind of money? I'm thinking of all the wonderful humanitarians who must have that kind of money to spend on a painting. And you know what? It's a short list. Instead, I think after just reading a great article in the New Yorker magazine, maybe it was bought by a member of the Sackler family, for instance, who became uber wealthy by hooking Americans on opioids, funding a false media establishment, sending out fake information, bribing or lying to doctors, all to be able to kill perhaps 50,000 Americans a year at this point in time. Yeah, maybe they have the money to spend that kind of money on a painting. They certainly have the money to get buildings named after themselves. Okay, I'd like at this time to move to show you some of my own artwork. Yes, inspired by a $450 million painting, Look at the classic lines here. Look at the brilliant work. This is printing stuff. I did this. I know, hard to imagine. I am that multifaceted. Forward Nation Radio, in black and white or in color. And these can be yours. Okay? I understand I'm not Leonardo. Okay? I'm alive. I don't know what that chump's worth, but whatever. I understand there's no Jesus in any of these pictures. That's got to hurt the value somewhat. But this is some real classic stuff. And if you had $450 million to spend on a painting, feast your eyes upon this. This also gives me the opportunity, in addition to maybe sell some fine artwork, to go into a little bit of a sales pitch about Forward Nation Radio. Turns out I actually did make these, and I made these at a children's birthday party that my children attended at Little Pulp Printing in Glendale, Queens. No, they have not paid me to say that. I actually liked the product. I actually thought it was a great idea for a children's birthday party. The guy who owns it was a nice guy. It's something I believe in. Imagine how much of your product I could sell if you paid me to believe in it. Okay, we have integrity, so I'm not going to shill for any product that I don't actually believe in. I'm talking to you now, Elon Musk. I understand that it was a bad quarter for Tesla. You announced your results recently, and it was a very disappointing quarter. You know how you can get your numbers up? Let me drive one of your cars. Give me one of your cars, and if I like it, and not one of the cheap ones, like one of the good ones, it's a pretty safe bet that I will talk about it on this show and sell a whole lot of your products. Now, I'm making a point about this. I'm making a bit of a joke about this. But if you offered me a lot of money, I would be tempted to shill for products I don't necessarily like. This is the nature of marketing these days. People have been taught well enough not necessarily to believe what they see in a TV commercial. But if you could make that TV commercial seem real, if you can incorporate your ads into everyday life, your appeal becomes that much more valuable. The ad becomes that much more lucrative. David Leventhal wasn't paid to say that on Forward Nation Radio. He truly believes in the merits of the Tesla Model S. In gray, blue, whatever. He truly believes in the product. And if he doesn't believe in the product, offer him money to make believe he believes in the product. And thus, we now have advertisements incorporated into everything we say and do. What people say on TV, people say on the news, and that makes it much more dangerous for most of us. Because the ads not only sell products that it turns out you may not need, they sell ideas, which it turns out aren't good for you. This has been our theme of the last few weeks and our theme of all the weeks going forward. The amount of bullshit in the media, in our society, that leads people to make such unbelievably bad decisions like, I don't know, I think I'll buy me a Donald Trump, that might be a product I might enjoy. Alternatively, by the way, if you don't want to buy some of my brilliant artwork, Forward Nation Radio will take your donations. Why would you give us your hard-earned money? Simple. I'm doing this for you. It will benefit you in the long run. I know it will seem to you like you're just giving me your hard-earned money. But I promise you that whatever you give to me will be given back to you multifold. What does this sound like? This is supply side economics. 37 years and counting, and we're still waiting for the payback. But that doesn't stop the new tax cut plan. Oh yes, everybody, give a lot of money to billionaires, and you'll be better off in the long run. Now this seems stupid. This seems stupid in part because you're watching Forward Nation Radio, so you're probably better informed and more thoughtful than most of your contemporaries. It's also stupid because we forgot something important, which is, in order to sell this, I'm going to need millions of dollars from those wealthy people buying TV time, ads, commentators, you know, just what we were talking about, to tell you that there are, in fact, studies that someone just came out with that showed if you give a billionaire a tax cut, more money for public education. Cut down a billionaire's fees for something? Fewer children on food stamps. More jobs, everybody. Give billionaires tax cuts, and those billionaires who've been hiding their money abroad will all of a sudden go, yep, now I've got enough, now I'm willing to share. It sounds awfully stupid, and it is awfully stupid. But with years and millions of dollars of advertising, and an entire news channel at least devoted to selling this shit to gullible people and desperate people, this actually becomes the economic policy of one of our national political parties, despite its failure to work and its failure to be serious for almost 40 years. Okay, speaking of the tax plan, of course, a little bit more on that, because it's not too late to call your senators and yell, and senators that aren't yours, and yell and scream, because it's going to take a lot to stop this. We were going to give tax cuts to rich people, as we pointed out last week, blatantly paid for by taking health insurance away from young people who might need it. By not advertising Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, by not pushing enrollment, by closing the website on Sundays, because of course every good website should take Sunday off. All in an effort to reduce enrollments. And ironically, you know what's happened so far? Enrollments are way up. We're happy to report that they've gone back to the Congressional Budget Office to rework the numbers, because it turns out we may not be saving as much money over the dead bodies of Americans as we hoped if we're a Republican Party. That's what we're dealing with right now. More on the tax plan later. Right now, we'd like to move on to an even more discomforting subject, and that is the subject of sexual harassment and sexual misconduct. We get to report on this show around Thanksgiving that for the first and hopefully the last time in American history, the President of the United States has endorsed a multiply alleged, credibly alleged, child predator. Donald Trump has endorsed Roy Moore, who many women have come out to credibly claim hit on them at least, molested at least one. Other people have come out and said he was on watch at the mall as a 32-year-old district attorney, you know, the guy in charge of enforcing the laws, such as child predation. The President of the United States has endorsed him. After all, he needs him. Because who cares about trying to molest a 14-year-old girl when you're busy trying to sodomize an entire nation? And Donald Trump and the Republicans need his vote. We're going to talk later again about tribalism. Remember that one. It is a wonderful thing that we are talking about sexual harassment, because it's something that needed to be talked about for a long time. is way more common than most of us would like to believe, and it needs to be addressed. For some of us, of course, on the left, the subject became that much more uncomfortable when we found out that someone or some ones that we like are actually caught up in this mess. I like Al Franken. I like him as a senator and a human being. I like him as an author. I think his book, Lies and Lying Liars Who Tell Them, is must reading for anyone who likes to laugh out loud and likes to have a sense of what's going on in the conservative media in lying to the people who watch it. And yet, he's involved. He's been not only credibly accused of inappropriate behavior, but he's admitted to it. And we have pictures of some of it. And I've been trying to figure out, since that time, how to talk about the subject and how to look at the subject, because it is complicated. The first thing that I hope that we're clear on as the discussion moves forward is that we should not be making false equivalences. There are whole different levels of misconduct that we need to be talking about. The first one, of course, is what happens in the workplace. I talk in one of my classes about sexual harassment under Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which deals with employment. And that presents a unique problem that has to do with power and women's ability to succeed and compete on a level playing field with men. That is particularly problematic. I've had discussions with the Franken case, over the Franken case, said, is that workplace? They were on a USO tour. Does that qualify as at the workplace? The context does matter, but if it's work, it's more problematic even, I kind of thought. The next level, of course, is it just rude, inappropriate, gauche, or is it assault? Is it against the law? One of my first thoughts when I saw the Franken thing come out was, did he actually touch her breasts? I know that might sound like a lawyerly distinction, but if he's clowning about touching her breasts, then it's inappropriate, it's not funny, it's objectifying a woman and her breasts. But it's not assault. The kissing on stage, that certainly might be sexual assault. Most of us would look and say, not quite of the same type as perhaps groping her breasts or pussy grabbing, for that matter. And these are the kind of distinctions that we're now going to have to make. At least it didn't involve a minor. We're at this point now saying, well, at least she was an adult. As opposed, of course, to Roy Moore, and also barely in the news, Ralph Shorty, the former campaign coordinator for Donald Trump, or a former campaign coordinator in, I forget what state he was in, who recently pled guilty to child sex trafficking. When it involves minors, of course, it becomes a much greater problem. One, it's against the law. Two, we tend to protect minors more than we protect others. I had a discussion about this in class today. As I try to look at these issues and figure out what kind of a society we want to be and what the punishment should be for these people, I use those three criteria and I look at it. How inappropriate was it? And I try to have empathy. I try to put myself in the shoes of the victim. And I realized after looking at this issue that I can't really do that. That as a man, I can't quite put myself in the shoes of a woman. I've talked in class about the fact that I went to law school in Greenwich Village, and I several times was hit upon by gay men. I never had a problem with that. Found it kind of flattering, even though I wasn't interested. And then, of course, I think, but I wasn't physically threatened by them. I'm also not a member of a sex that has long faced sexual discrimination, that has long been objectified because of their looks and their sexuality. So I try to put myself in the position of a woman who might feel more vulnerable and more threatened. And I finally came up with the idea, how about if I were getting unwanted advances and I was in prison? And the head guy in the prison yard was making inappropriate comments. And I think that would be much more problematic for me because now I'm more vulnerable. Bottom line here, we've been talking for weeks about the fact that the President of the United States and most of the people in his party don't seem to have the ability to show any empathy. And for us to address these issues and reach a result that we can all be happy with, a result that doesn't take sexuality out of our society. If Al Franken was making fun out of possibly touching her breasts, if he's making fun of sexual assault or light of sexual assault, that's problematic. If he's pointing out the fact that men are attracted to breasts, that's not even news. Men are attracted to breasts and many other parts of a woman's body. Where do we have to draw the line? We don't want to take sex completely out of our society. And we expect people with empathy and decency to be making these decisions, to be joining in the national conversation. Unfortunately, when I think, should Senator Franken be asked to resign, I think what we're going to end up with is all the liberals are going to have to resign. All the conservatives are going to stay in office because their people say, who gives a shit? And that's clearly not a result we can all abide by. Okay, we're going to take a listener question in a minute. Just a couple of quick other comments on newsworthy items that matter to you and whose resolution is determined by misinformation in the media. First, Keystone XL oil pipeline was approved by the Nebraska Public Service Commission, 3-2. That's right, the Keystone XL oil pipeline may be approved to go through Nebraska, one of its final touches, by a one-person majority on the Nebraska Public Service Commission. Yes, it was approved with an alternate route, which may cause problems for the company. It's ironic that this happens in the wake of a 210,000-gallon oil spill by that very same company, TransCanada, just days before. Which, by the way, the Nebraska Public Service Commission could not consider in considering its ruling, because by law, it cannot consider safety in deciding whether or not the pipeline would be approved. How are we so messed up when it comes to issues of climate change and how much they're going to hurt? Is this going to hurt people? There will be oil spills and people will be harmed. Well, you create a question through millions and millions of dollars of ad spending about whether climate change even exists. You hire people to deny it, make believe they're scientists, and you put this out all over Fox News and all over the right-wing media so that the people who are exposed to this actually think that there's no such thing as climate change. There's some foreign news we want to leave with real quickly before we take our question, because it is relevant to several things in the United States. Robert Mugabe, the longtime, in fact, 37-year ruler of Zimbabwe, was ousted from office. Once again, underscoring the old political adage, 38 years is too many. After 37 years, Mugabe was forced out. Just when his economic policies were about to kick in. 37 years, that's supply-side economics. If they'd only waited a few years, just like in America, I bet Zimbabwe would be rolling in economic success. Trump presumably heard about Mugabe. Someone probably told him that there A is a Mugabe and B is an Africa. And Trump's response presumably was, 37 years? Wow, he must be really rich. Well, bad news for Trump. He probably won't get to serve 37 years. And even more so, the story from Zimbabwe, Mugabe wanted to be succeeded by his wife, 42 years younger. Trump might learn that he can't pass the presidency down to his 42-year younger wife, Ivanka, whatever. Yeah, you get the idea. You're not going to be able to install your daughter as president, you're just going to let her and her husband run the country as they are right now. Okay, I want to go into a listener question for this week. We're going to spend some time on this because, again, it allows us to further discuss this whole idea of the conservative media and why this country has gotten to the place that it's gotten. So here's the question. My question for David Leventhal is, how can America recover from the shocking level of divisiveness that is so pervasive in our society now? I know that Russian troll accounts and fake news has spread feelings of disdain for our fellow citizens far and wide via social media and email. Conservatives and liberals seem to hate each other with a passion. And any attempts to reach across the aisle are seen as a sign of weakness. What could possibly be done when we simply don't want to talk to each other? That's from Santino in New York. Santino, thanks for the question. It's ironic, or it's interesting, how tribalism seems to be the word of the year. Maybe we'll see that as the Oxford Dictionary word of the year next year. I'm listening to one of the podcasts I like to listen to, and at one point, one of the speakers apologizes and says, yeah, I'm going to use the word again, but it's appropriate here, tribalism. We are tribal. We've talked about a lot in this class. We've been remarkably tribal as a society. The tax bill not only declares war on poor people, you can understand that, that's the wealthy just stealing more from the country, but the provisions of the tax bill are specifically designed to screw Democratic voters and Democratic voting states. This is unprecedented in American politics. Bear in mind that who were the most important beneficiaries of Obamacare? Republican voters, poor white people. Obama actually sought to help the country. Trump, once again, seems to declare war on all of the people who didn't vote for him. It's important to note that California and New York, two states, are going to be screwed in the tax plan. In case people want to say, well, they're just a bunch of takers anyway. Because that's what we've heard in the past. Turns out that California and New York contribute far more to the federal government than they get back from the federal government. It turns out the states that are the biggest takers are all red states. The blue states that are being screwed in the tax plan are actually the generous states. We have a political party dedicated to stopping people from voting, people who might vote for the other side. That's some serious tribalism. We have Roy Moore, whom it turns out most Republican Alabama voters say this whole imbroglio has made them more likely to vote for Roy Moore, to retreat, to circle their wagons, to retreat behind their apron strings, so to speak. When Trump was inaugurated in his inaugural address, he said, I will be the president for all Americans, and immediately set out proving that not to be the case. Recently, his emergency allocation budget for disaster relief does not include money to California for the wildfires they suffered and the billions of dollars in damage. Why should he help California? They didn't vote for him. And Russian trolls, you ask Santino, I know that Russian troll accounts of fake news has spread feelings of disdain for our fellow citizens far and wide. You think we needed Russian trolls to spread disdain for our fellow citizens? Do you think this is a new phenomenon? Spreading disdain for fellow citizens has been a tool in this country for a long time. Stephen Colbert made up the word truthiness years ago, years before the whole Russian fiasco. Alternative facts? This isn't new. John Kelly, the guy in the administration who's supposed to be the decent, moderate, thoughtful one, recently called Robert E. Lee an American hero, the guy who was singularly associated with trying to break up the country. And he said the Civil War was about a failure to compromise. It was not. It was about slavery. And the North was willing to compromise. We have the tax bill. Gary Cohn, Trump's economic advisor. You might have heard this, recently met with corporate executives for a photo op. Corporate executives, the kind of people benefiting from the Trump tax cut. And he said, hey, the tax cut's gonna lead to greater wages. It's gonna be wonderful for workers, isn't it? Give me a show of hands. And almost no hands went up. And Cohn was left like, hey, wait a minute, this is a photo op, people. Come on, help me out here. And they're like, yeah, no, we're not doing that. We're gonna keep the money, of course. The tax plan, as I described in class today, eliminates the estate tax. Oh, no, I'm sorry, did I say estate tax? I meant to say death tax. Because if you listen to conservative media, estate tax sounds like something you may not want to fight to keep. Because who has estates? Mostly wealthy people. But if you change the name to death tax, you can convince people to support the repeal of a tax that will never affect them or anyone in their family in their entire lives. You can have people supporting the looting of this country's future through this tax plan by lying about what's at stake, about supply-side economics and what's going to happen. We don't need Russians to do this. We have right-wing media. And this is the most important thing I want to point out here. And I understand it's a little strange to be answering a question about how do we deal with divisiveness by being divisive. But let's be clear here. Let's not do false equivalences. This is not a both sides thing. One political party has gone insane. Divisiveness, when people like William Kristol, David Brooks, Brett Stevens, Ross Duttat are all on my side, so to speak, it's not my side's problem. My side nominated an eminently qualified person to be president of the United States, not a firebrand liberal, a mostly moderate, thoughtful, intelligent human being. The other side gave us Trump. Before that, they gave us Sarah Palin as vice president. They gave us George W. Bush. They gave us Dan Quayle, who couldn't spell potato to a sixth grader, etc. It's not both sides. The divisiveness is coming, as many conservatives are pointing out, and I've read this on air. Norman Ornstein is a longtime conservative. I can sit down and talk to, I expect. Because he understands his party's gone insane. When one political party stops dealing with facts, reason, education, logic, it's not a both sides issue. When one political party tries to jail its political enemies, when one political party can't call out a hostile foreign power stealing a U.S. election, when one political party gives us Ann Coulter, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, Michael Savage, the list goes on and on. Yes, we are a divided country. But we are divided because one side has gone insane. We have conservative media and voices that spend hundreds of millions or billions of dollars a year deceiving people so they can have more. The FCC finalizes a plan to end net neutrality. As we speak, they're getting rid of net neutrality. There are several issues involved with this question. The bottom line is going to be, your internet service provider can make Fox News come to you real fast and The Nation magazine come to you real slow. The Kochs, you heard that the Justice Department, the Antitrust Division, has squelched for now the AT&T buyout or merger of Time Warner. They say they need to divest themselves of CNN. Maybe for real legitimate reasons, but that's hard to believe considering some of the things the president has said. Well, guess who's in the market for buying on the team looking to buy CNN? The Koch brothers. Because owning one conservative all-news 24 hours a day channel to lie to people isn't good enough. You're going to have to buy more. So maybe soon the Koch brothers will spread their conservative bullshit through CNN. Sinclair is busy buying up. Sinclair, which is more conservative, thinks Fox News are a bunch of liberals, apparently, buying up local news stations around this country. This is a problem that right now is only getting worse. So now I'll try somewhat to address your question. How do you battle this? We're going to have to do something about the conservative media. It is interconnected. It feeds off of each other. Breitbart, Drudge, Fox, Sinclair, the president, Fox News, all quote each other as sources. And it goes round and round and round, spreading the lies, spreading rage, resentment, paranoia. From Night of the Living Dead, they're 24 hours a day, they're coming to get you, Barbara. That's why we're divided. And it looks like it's getting worse. The impact is not sufficiently countered by fact-based media, because most of what people watch is corporate media that doesn't want to do battle with right-wing media. How do we get beyond this divisiveness? The first thing we're going to have to do is we're going to have to fix our media problems. Maybe reinstitute the fairness doctrine. Do something to contain the spread of false information. It does, at this point, present a clear and present danger to the future of this country. And as much as I am a supporter of freedom of speech, something's going to have to happen where we're all going to have to, at some point, share the same facts. You are entitled to your own opinion, but not your own facts. And yet, that's what many in this country get. The hope is that if we share the same facts, there'll be more of a meeting of the minds. We'll be able to sit down and talk with each other, as I'm sure I could with any principled conservative. Not someone on Fox News or right-wing radio. I suppose in a practical sense, look for areas of common agreement. Someone recently noted, running for Congress, if I knock on their door and I say I'm a Democrat, they slam the door in my face. But if I show up with a Republican who says, hey, let me introduce you to a friend of mine, so you need to meet a member of the tribe to give you inroads into that tribe. Maybe we could try to do more of that. I don't think most of these things are going to work given the state of our media. Criminal justice reform, death penalty reform, are all areas of comment of agreement. Well, not anymore. Maybe we can build on animal rights. At least we can agree that elephants might need some protection. The divide you ask about, well, here's a scary thought. Maybe we're that divided in part because of false media, we are that divided. I don't know that I'm ever going to be able to sit down with a neo-Nazi and come to some kind of agreement. Maybe an anti-Semite a little bit, they can be shown to see some reason at some point. The scary thought is, maybe we really are that divided as a country between thoughtful, informed, empathetic people and really angry, resentful people moving on false facts. Anyway, what is the real divide that I think we need to address first before we address the divisiveness in this country? The real divide in this country is between the ultra wealthy and everybody else. You want to fix the divide between left and right? Fix the divide between super wealthy and everybody else. Tax the shit out of the super wealthy, the exact opposite of what we're doing. I know that probably wasn't a very satisfying answer. That's the best I can do, Santino. We look forward to addressing this issue in future shows. Anyway, that's today's show. Sorry we went a little bit over. We had a lot to talk about. We always do. Like Looking Forward, go to forwardnationradio.com. That's forwardnationradio.com. And get the full experience there. You'll see the video from this and every episode there and on our YouTube channel as well. Don't miss the next Forward Nation Radio podcast on Podbean at podbean.com. If you love what you heard, like what you heard, tolerate what you heard, please like us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel as well. Tell your friends, spread the word. Forward Nation Radio, Merry Christmas to all.
You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.